Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys Podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Preacher Boys Podcast. Ashley, welcome back.
Thanks. I'm so excited. I love these conversations that we're able to have.
This conversation, I want to talk a little bit about educating the public. And I think even beyond that, just educating people in any facet or any sphere about the realities of abuse, whether that's in religious context, whether it's interpersonal violence. Courage 365 serves all types of different people who've experienced abusive environments. So first and foremost, why do you think education about abuse is important? And how does it contribute to breaking the cycles of violence in any setting?
Well, there's a saying that if you know better, you can do better. And I think that's really kind of the foundation of it. You can't do better. You can't create change if you don't know what needs to be changed. And I think there are a lot of people who are just completely unaware of what is going on, the abuse, the things happening in churches. There are certainly people who know and know exactly what they're doing, and they're very intentional. And I think sometimes those higher up people may try to keep the regular person away from that information. But I generally think a lot of the public just has not been made aware. And so you have to know what's going on before you can have a reaction to it, before you can feel that injustice rise up and then be inspired to take some sort of action or support some kind of cause.
One of the biggest frustrations when you're leaving an abusive environment is you feel like everyone else is kind of blinded to it because you experienced it. And you're really dealing with two types of people, or I guess I'll say three. There's people that are aware of it and kind of rally around you. There's the people that are truly blind to it and have never seen it happen to them or someone they know, or at least haven't recognized it as such. They probably know somebody that's experienced it. And then there's the people that are burying their head in the sand and are going, I don't want to know about this. Yeah. And, you know, I think sometimes it's hard because we do find our voice leaving. We start talking about these issues and we treat everybody equally in terms of, hey, if they know, they're going to take action. And we become frustrated when people either continue to be ignorant to it just because maybe we're not knowing how to communicate the right way. They're choosing to ignore us, which is the most frustrating. Or there are people that are trying to support but are trying to learn, don't know how. And those are relationships that are a little bit easier to navigate. I guess first and foremost, how much energy should someone who's leaving an abusive environment, how much energy should they be putting forth personally to try to educate the people around them? Or should they focus inwardly first?
I think that that's going to be a nuanced thing based on the survivor, because to some degree, there has to be some level of education to be able to disclose abuse, to be able to say this happened to me, whether that's to a family member, whether that's to police. And so on some level, I think a discussion to be able to reach out and get help, that is a form of education of saying this happened and I need help. But beyond that, I think first and foremost, you've got to focus on yourself. You've got to focus on your own healing. But you'll probably, in many cases, run into people who are going to be asking questions, who are going to be trying to, whether inserting themselves into the narrative for good reasons because they want to support, or whether it's because they're very defensive. There may be times where you feel like you need to educate. But first and foremost, you got to take care of yourself. But I would not spend any time as a survivor trying to educate people who do not want to be educated. For many years, I thought and believed the myth that if people just knew, they would change. And there's a lot of people where that's true for, but then there are some people who that is absolutely not true for. They either already know and don't care, or once they find out, it triggers some sort of a kind of egotistical response of like, I'm connected to this organization, or I know this person.
I'm not like, so I, don't broad brush all of
exactly.
us.
Exactly. Yeah. Right, right. That defensiveness, I did try to change people's mind. It doesn't work. But when you get to a place where you're a little bit stronger, like educating people that are close to you, who are supportive, that can be useful. And I guess this is kind of maybe jumping ahead in the conversation a little bit, but even when I've done like protests and rallies, when I've been calling out and trying to educate people who I know don't want to be educated, my primary reason for that is not to change their minds because I know they're not willing to have that happen. My primary reason is for all the other people watching me try to educate those people. And they'll learn something in the education, but they'll also learn about the people who are not willing to change. And so that's kind of a way to look at it. But first and foremost, you got to take care of yourself.
The cliche is a cliche for a reason, about putting your oxygen mask on first. And I think sometimes it's easy to expend all of your energy into frustration, and it'll go quick when you're dealing with people who are being ignorant to something. I think once you are in a place where you're ready to be in that advocacy mindset, or that, whether it's for yourself or for somebody else, I think then it's just remembering what your purpose is, which is to help other people who've been through it. And I love that you brought up protests, because I was just recently a part of one, and there were some people that were like, this isn't going to change their mind. And my response to that was, when you go and protest somewhere, and this can be online or in person, if you protest in a public way against a organization or an abusive person, one of two things is going to happen. If they respond in a way where they will have a dialogue and they're going to start changing the system, which I wouldn't hold your breath for, but if that does happen, you won. Like, the protest was a success, change is happening. If they refuse to engage, or if they, even worse, if they start condemning or speaking badly about those who've experienced these abuses, you've won, because you've revealed who they are in a very public way. And so no matter what happens, if you go in with an even head and you can go, all I'm going to do is expose what's happening, however they respond, it's showing that this needed to happen one way or another. And so I think going into it, not expecting the leadership to change, but maybe knowing, hey, I'm going to educate the people in the pew, I'm going to educate the people in the family, whatever that context is, I think that's a really, really helpful way to look at it. I think the next piece of this, kind of tying to like personal responsibility of like being the educator and now turning around and being the advocate, is, you know, there's a lot of organizations that are creating great resources. I think a lot of times people leave and they find their voice, but they don't know how to utilize their voice. So they go, hey, now I need to start a podcast, or hey, I need to go lead a protest, or hey, I need to go write a book. But they hate writing, or they hate speaking in front of people, or they hate being out in public. And so they don't take into account their own personality. Do you think that, I know this is probably a nuanced answer, but do you think that it's better in some cases to just share resources someone already has? Do you think that everybody, and softball answer here, but do you think everybody should go start their own thing or their own organization? Like, how do people determine what would be the best route for them in terms of spreading their voice and amplifying it?
I think that takes a lot of self-reflection, because when you have experienced abuse, not only are you experiencing PTSD, but you're usually experiencing all the different stages of grief. And one of the stages of grief is anger. And I don't think that's a bad stage. In fact, I think it can be very motivating. Some of my best advocacy work has been done when I have been very pissed off and angry, because I really wanted to focus on helping people and I didn't want this injustice to continue. However, when your brain goes into a state where you're angry, it actually kind of triggers a little bit of that fight or flight response. And so part of your brain, a lot of the deep thinking portions kind of go offline. And, you know, there are other parts of your body that get activated, like your legs are ready to run fast, your teeth are ready to chomp. You know, you want to say things very, you know, loudly. And that's not bad. But before you decide where you point your anger in a positive direction, you got to quiet yourself a little bit and ask yourself, like, okay, I'm angry about this, and I should be. This anger is motivating me to take action, and I want to take action. But how can I take action that is actually in alignment with who I am, mm-hmm. what I'm capable of handling right now, and what really is needed in the world? Not just something to perform because we have this urge inside of us. I'm a big intuition girly, so I hope that doesn't scare people here. But, you know, just getting quiet and just asking yourself, like, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? Yeah. What is something that I'm naturally drawn to and would be good at using this skill to help other people? Hmm. Where are there other organizations that I could back up and support? And not just looking at yourself as like this island, but looking at the survivor community as a whole and seeing where you can plug into that. Where is an actual need? The other thing is, I find that there are some people who naturally are very good starters. There are other people who are very good carry outers. And then there's other people who are very good amplifiers and supporters of the people who are starting and carrying out. All of those are equally valuable, but you have to evaluate in yourself kind of which one of those three types you are. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to get burned out very easily. Like, if it's in your personality and in your emotional capacity at the time to amplify other organizations doing good work, and you instead decide to start your own nonprofit, you're probably going to burn out. You know, if you are somebody who feels really called to start something unique that's not already available, and you don't do that out of fear and instead just try to support somebody else's thing, you're probably going to get very disinterested and not be effective. So I think a lot of it is getting quiet and realizing what your motivations are, really realizing what your goals are, and then also, like, what would actually be a good fit for me? And a good fit for me right now with the energy and emotional capacity that I have.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
That's something when you're quieting yourself, I always try to look forward into the future to be like, if I'm known for this in 5 years, would I be happy about that? And, you know, I think that's helped me as I make decisions about the course of the podcast. Like, there was a period I was considering starting a nonprofit and, you know, like very early on the show, I actually still have the Twitter handle, but nobody's ever seen it. Like, but I got to a point where I was like, I'm not built to run an organization. I'm a good microphone person. I'm a good amplifier. I can do that. That's where it's best served. There's been times through the show I'm like, I'm not doing anything valuable. Like, I should just go do law enforcement training and go work with, you know, like, or go to law school. And I realize, like, my gifting is in what I'm currently doing. That's why it's worked so far. And so instead, I found partnerships with people like yourself where you're good with the organization side, and there's people in our team that are good at creating resources consistently. And, you know, and so I think not having to be all things to all men is like a really helpful, kind of valuable thing kind of dialing into education itself, you know, what are some of the areas in which you think there's, I guess, a vacuum where people need to be educated when it comes to abuse? I know there's a lot of areas people are misinformed about abuse, but what are some kind of pressing areas where you think, hey, there needs to be more education in this area when it comes to this realm?
So the two areas that popped my mind, one is power structures and the other is trauma. So there's a lot of like memes about trauma. There's a lot of like just general information floating around. But I actually think it's very valuable for people to read articles and look at videos made by therapists and psychologists and doctors to not only be able to talk about the fact trauma, but actually what it's doing in the brain. Because when you can understand, like, okay, the reason I am seeing red right now and I have tunnel vision and I can't focus on anything else is because I'm in fight or flight and I need to calm my body down so I can see the whole picture. That's really useful information that you can be like, okay, this is what's happening in my brain. There's literally a part that's being kind of turned off and a part that's being turned on. And this is not how I normally think. My executive function is like very much quieted right now. To be able to understand how that works and then how you can calm your body and use it to your advantage, I think that is a lot more actionable than just, oh yeah, trauma can make you feel angry. Oh yeah, trauma can make you feel scared and sad. But understanding like the why behind it also gives you some control or understanding of what you can do to mitigate it. And then also teaching other people about how trauma really works in the brain and what to expect if somebody is going through a PTSD or panic attack moment, so they can be understanding and realize, okay, they're using a different part of their brain right now. It's hard for them to focus on the big picture. Maybe I can help bring them into the big picture again. So I do think we're talking very surface level about trauma, but I think we need to go a bit deeper so we can understand kind of the mechanics of how our brains work, which really is pretty simple. It's been broken down into like some simple terms. And so I think that could be really useful and could help people make creative solutions. The other thing is power structures. And again, I see this a lot of times being talked about in a very surface level. And the points are valid. Yes, you know, understanding that abuse is always about power and control. That is 100% an important thing to know. But let's also look what power structures look like. What are the key markers of somebody who has more power over you? Because it's not automatically always noticeable or accepted in society. So we know in the advocacy community that a pastor has more power over a congregant. And so sexual relationships in that direction are sexual assaults. They're dangerous. But we don't necessarily have those same conversations about like a wealthy football player and a groupie girl, you know, because we don't think of it in the same thing. But he probably has a lot of opportunity, power. He can make or break her career, set her up, those sort of things. But then also looking at power structures, not just church, not just abuser, victim, like direct violence, but where's classism coming into play? Where's racism coming into play? Where's homophobia coming into play? Patriarchy, all these like societal things that aren't just interpersonal, they're like complete systems. I think educating people about that allows us to have a more holistic response and realize that we're not just changing this person or removing this person from society because they're dangerous. We really need to be addressing these whole systems. And maybe there's a system that affects me, but doesn't affect somebody else. I think the racism thing, that's another layer to abuse that a lot of my Black and Brown friends, you know, experience on top of their assault. That hasn't been my experience. So learning about that power inequality structure has helped me understand more how I can be more equitable in my advocacy work.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned, like, there's a lot of memes and there's a lot of like trauma memes and like there's a lot of people talking about narcissists. And I think part of the idea of education, both of ourselves and as we turn around and educate people around us, is there's so much unhelpful dialogue because we're mislabeling things. And I was speaking to someone just recently, and I was talking about Chuck DeGroat's book, When Narcissism Comes to Church. And I said, I sat down with that book within my mind, a list of people I was convinced were narcissists. And then halfway through the book was like, oh, they're not. I was totally mislabeling them. This is an actual diagnosis of something that they don't meet the criteria for. And then a few pages into one chapter, I was going, am I a narcissist? I'm like reading to study. And then by the end of it, I was going, there's some people I feel very uncertain of that I was always certain of. There's people I was uncertain of that now I feel a lot more comfortable with. But it's because I actually read someone who understands it. And they're not just labeling somebody in a TikTok video, you know, which I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say it's not helpful for people to call bad behavior. But I think when we start using clinical labels, like even trauma, like how many times have you seen a meme where it's like, oh, when you have trauma from this, and it's like, well, no, that just bothered you. That's not trauma. Or I feel triggered. And it's like, well, this didn't shut you down completely. In this moment, like there's legitimate things that panic attacks, like a panic attack versus feeling uncomfortable with something.
Right.
You know, I think having the right terminology is key, both in educating others and ourselves. For those that are listening, I know that Courage 365 has a lot of resources for people coming in at many different experiences, many different perspectives. But maybe what are like a couple of resources that you'd recommend to someone who's starting to understand abuse really for the first time, or starting to just get that elementary understanding of those experiences?
So we have two really good resources for that. One is more of a kind of down to earth. I mean, they're both down to earth, but this one is a bit more conversational. So we actually polled our survivor community, and then with their consent, we put it into an ebook called What I Wish I Knew Before I Left. And it's these insights from for survivors about what it was like to experience abuse and trauma and kind of understanding that situation from their perspective. But then it was paired with somebody who is an expert in trauma understanding. And so they were able to take the statement that the survivor gave and kind of expound on it a little bit. So you could see that in a broader context and a little bit more, little deeper education about that. So that's a really good one. The other one is we have something called the Courage Cards. And this comes with an ebook that talks about trauma, educates about trauma and how it works in the body and brain. But then it goes a step further and it talks about how to calm your body when you're experiencing panic or anxiety. And it has a bunch of different tips, but a lot of those we placed on these little flashcards you can print out. And when you print them, you can cut them up, put them in your purse, your side table, your wallet, in your car. And when you're starting to have those anxiety and just overwhelmed responses in your body, you can't always figure out like what you should do to fix it in the moment. So you can kind of go through your flashcards and see what might feel good in that moment. Or my favorite is to give them to a loved one. Like I've given a list to my husband of like, when I'm freaking out, maybe ask me if I want to go on a walk or, you know, some of these things. So those can be really both intellectually educational, but they also have really practical aspects to them.
Yeah, I love those resources. And I'll link to those in the show notes as well. And I think I have a list I'll link to as well of just a couple books that have been helpful to me recently and just kind of understanding. And I mean, even episodes that I've had on the show with people like Hillary McBride with talking about embodiment has been so helpful to me. There's a lot that I think help you, again, put the right label onto the things that you're experiencing and learning equally not to downplay certain things that should be talked about in a serious way, but also not to mislabel some things as maybe more serious than what they are. And like trying to establish like, what did I experience and where do I go from here? I think that's the next piece that is probably a whole nother video is like, okay, I know there's a problem. Now what? And I think a lot of times we get lost there. So, but yeah, I think overall like education is one of the things that if anybody walks away from this episode, educate yourself and then start to educate others, but it doesn't have to be you doing all of the work. There's so many good resources out there already just waiting to be utilized.
Right. Do not reinvent the wheel when there's good stuff already there. Build upon what other people have done, but there's no reason to start from scratch because I think education should be a collaborative community event, and your voice would be really valuable to that conversation, but no need to start from scratch.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.